The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where we're going to do our best today to answer your questions, most of which have been sent in by email. But I think today, pretty much first thing here, after we get done with our little intros, is we've got a caller on the phone, actually. So we'll have a live caller on the show, which does happen occasionally. This person did it the way that's probably easiest to do, which is to give us a ring a little before the show so we can make sure you're on the schedule, and we'll just pop in and get to you right away. So sounds like they are ready whenever we are. So after Jim says hello.
Hola.
And Joe says hello.
Hello.
You didn't know I was bilingual, did you?
Yeah, Joe's clearly not multilingual.
I am.
Clearly. So we've got a variety of questions today. We must have some tax questions. That's why Joe is with us. Joe, welcome back. You always get brought up here when we have some tax questions, and I think the call might be related to tax questions.
You look cold. So,
I am freezing.
Are you seriously cold?
I am seriously cold. I had that space heater you got me last year. I put that downstairs earlier.
I'm not cold up here. You cold up here?
No.
It's a woman thing.
That okay. Sounds sexist.
She can say that, not me.
I got
a whole lecture this morning, the difference between girl, gal, and woman. She's a tax.
Gal is probably a word not used much anymore.
But it's an okay word to use, I was told.
Gal?
Gal. I can call them the tax
like
gals.
Buffalo gals, won't
I
you come out tonight?
I can call them the tax women, tax gals, tax team, but not tax girls. Yeah, I got a whole.
I understand the girls, but I'm not. I guess I didn't realize gal was better.
I thought gal would have been more demeaning, and every woman in the office who was correcting me said no.
I noticed you didn't list chick in your.
Oh,
in
I'm
your
not
list.
That dumb. You think I'm going to call them the tax chicks? Would that go over well?
I really don't
yeah,
care
don't
at
care.
All.
You're,
no,
you're,
I don't.
Yeah.
Everyone else seems to, but I
thing.
I
yeah.
don't.
That's okay.
I don't have any input.
We all
on
need
that.
To be edumacated on respectful use of the English language.
Tax chick sounds pretty cool.
It does kind of sounds like leather jackets
yeah.
and motorcycles.
Yeah, tax chicks.
Mm-hmm. We'll get it okayed with Layla first.
No, Layla won't go for that.
Okay. So I'll tell Laura to send up our caller. I'm not sure of the. It's a tax related question. I think it has to do with a severance check, but we'll find out momentarily as soon as they come up. I don't know their real name, so I'm not going to share it with Jim, so he then won't accidentally share it with our listeners.
We'll call him George.
We are going to call him George or Georgette. I'm actually just assuming it's...
Are they
it's,
from Kentucky?
I don't know. We're about to find out here. So, hi, thanks for calling the Retirement and IRA Show. Can you hear
Hello.
Us? Hi. So we're gonna call you George, like we usually do on the show here, just to protect your anonymity, to say it like Jim says it. And I don't know if you may not have heard, we have Joe on the podcast here today. So she does a lot of our tax work here. So
great.
But I think I didn't get a lot of detail, but it sounded like you had a tax related question.
I do. Do you want it now or?
Well, what state are you in?
I'm in Connecticut.
Connecticut. All right, that's not Kentucky, but it begins with a similar sounding phrase.
Similar sounding. Yeah, no, I get it. He's closer to Kentucky than we are.
You a Pats fan? You can make up for this. Are you a Pats fan?
I am not, unfortunately.
I think we're losing you.
I'm a Pats hater, but I know that's not a good thing to say, but being honest.
Yeah, no, that's perfectly fine on this show.
I take it in Connecticut you're a Giants fan, then.
Actually, I'm a Jets fan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And I grew up in Buffalo, so I've had a long, torturous football life of rooting.
Hey, Buffalo looked good on Sunday. I thought they were going to take it to the Pats for sure. They actually played much better than the Pats.
They did, actually.
The
Pats their defense
won is beyond
is
me. Yeah.
Good defense.
Yeah. Well, and we watch the Bills out there now, too, at least from my neck of the woods, because Josh Allen got sent out there from the University of Wyoming.
Yeah, he's from the University of Wyoming. Yeah.
So they're just a short 50-minute drive from our podcast location here. So
Buffalo? Buffalo's in
Wyoming.
Oh, I thought you thought Buffalo. I was like, you can't make it in Buffalo in 50 minutes.
There are Buffalo in Wyoming.
Yeah, we can see Buffalo in Wyoming.
Anyway. Maybe George Clooney and his private jets could get there that quick.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You know. Harrison Ford is up there, too. Anyway.
So you had a question on something. So
yeah, so I just basically got a severance check. And a large severance check, basically a 2-year severance check. And I just wondered if there was any tax mitigation that I could look into, because it's the end of the year. I have my full year salary already. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending how you look at it, I've already maxed out my 401ks. I'm not eligible for an HSA because it's not a high deductible. And because the severance is at the end of the year, I just was wondering if there's any way to help mitigate having it all put in the higher tax brackets, since I've already filled up the lower tax brackets with my marginal rates with my salary up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way you can give it back?
That'd be a good start.
I mean, that sounds weird, but if there's any chance to give it back and ask for it to be given to you differently.
Yeah, I asked, and they would only give me the lump sum, and I even asked for a lump sum for a January 3rd payment. Right. You know, could they hold it off so at least, you know, it would go into the 2 years, would go into 1 year rather than 3 years.
And the answer
but
is
they
no.
said no.
Oh,
yeah.
They must be in cahoots with the government because they're making some decisions to greatly enhance government revenue.
It's a large corporation, so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to let Joe opine anything, and I have some ideas that I will share with you, but my ideas are going to come with a huge asterisk of don't try this at home, and you'd have to take the pros and cons of my ideas into consideration. But before my ideas, Joe, do you have anything? I mean, it's income. I don't know any other way. Short of if you're charitably inclined, you can give an awful lot to a donor advised fund. Are you familiar with donor advised funds?
I am.
So you could, if you happen to be charitably inclined, and then you can, it would be a 50% deduction, wouldn't it? Because it's not highly appreciated securities.
Right. Correct. So 50% of your AGI.
So if your AGI was $200,000, you could deduct $100,000 as a gift to a donor-advised fund. That would allow you to pretty much, I always tell my clients that a donor-advised fund is like the pre-funding of all your future gifts. You're just getting them out of the way. It's very similar to gift bunching, where you're going to give a charity a big amount and then tell them you're not going to get anything from me for the rest of my life. This would go into the donor advised fund, and then you can gift from it as much or as little as you want over the coming years. Now, there's some There could be a slight chance that a donor advised fund would force you to make a gift if enough people in the fund don't make gifts, but that I hardly ever happens, so don't even worry about that. So you could pretty much pre-fund future gifting if you wanted to. Now, remember, the only amount of deduction, and Joe, add if I speak wrong, please add in because I don't know taxes like you do, but really the only benefit is anything above. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
Do you itemize or do you take the standard deduction?
I usually itemize, but last year I used the standard because it was a 50-50 wash.
Right.
Yeah.
So a donor advised fund strategy, the benefit is really anything north of $24,000 because everybody gets a $24,000 standard deduction as a married couple. So if you only put $10,000 in the donor advised fund, it's going to go to waste because you're still going to take the standard deduction. But if you put $44,000 in, you're kind of getting a $20,000 benefit. Everybody gets $24,000 as a married couple, and then you would get another $20,000 on top of that. Do you agree on that, Chris?
Well, but if he triggers itemizing, then other things that might have been captured under the 24 would now be available to be deducted.
True.
So it's not quite a one-for-one off like that. So
Chris made a very good point. If you had $18,000 of deductions and a $24,000 standard deduction and you took that, the $18,000 is being waste.
Right.
But you plopped
$44,000
in, you're going to get the $20,000 above plus the $18,000 you couldn't take. So the benefit is a little bit bigger. But the downside of all this is...
You got to give away
the money.
Yeah, exactly.
So that sometimes appeals to people, sometimes doesn't. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, it's a great idea if he's charitably inclined to do. But unfortunately, severance pay, well, it is what it is. It's wages, it's salary that you were going to get essentially in some way. So it's going to be taxed the same way it would if you were to be working there.
So let me throw something
out. Yeah, the difference was just being taxed at much higher tax bracket.
Yeah,
I know it's income, but...
If there was some information from the employer, Joe, that indicated that this was instead of 2 years' worth of income, that it actually represented pay for 2020 and 2021 or something like that, and there was documentation that that's what it represented, does the IRS... The fact that you received it this year is what sinks the boat, right? There's no way you can argue, no, this was really for 2020 and 2021. Because you can kind of argue the reverse of that. You can get documentation
but
to say this is payment
for
a
2021 if he hadn't done any work in 2020?
Because
they're paying him
for 2 years' worth.
They treat the severance pay, depending how... Because you can negotiate some of these things, but they... generally treat the severance pay as salary.
Right.
So even though, yes, he's not working, that's what the tax treatment is going to be on that severance pay.
I don't want to go down a rabbit hole because we're getting away from what he is, and I'll ask you after we get off the phone with him a question on that. One thing that I'll mention only because I heard it this morning on the way in as I was driving in my car. I have a 45-minute commute. You know, it was 35 minutes, now it's 45 in 6 short years.
That's
how busy Colorado's getting. Anyway, so in my car, I was listening to the radio. I don't necessarily, in fact, not even necessarily, I don't personally recommend this because these are high risk. But the ad on the radio said, and it had to do with Wyoming, it said because of the Trump tax cuts, it didn't say Trump tax cuts, it said the recent tax act, I'm assuming the Trump tax cuts, investments in oil and gas are 100% deductible this year. So you got to rush and call this number for investments in oil and gas and get a 100% income tax deduction. Now, I'm not recommending this, George, because I don't trust any of those investments that you'd ever get your money back. So who cares if you can deduct the damn thing? I don't know if you're going to get your money back. But I have heard that oil and gas investments are tax favored. Do you know anything about that, Joe?
The only thing I would think that that's related to is only state. I can't think of anything federally that would
be. If this is Wyoming, that wouldn't matter because there's no income tax in Wyoming.
Yeah,
So what it sounds like you're saying is something federally deductible.
Right. The reason I mentioned Wyoming is a lot of oil and gas up in Wyoming.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Wyoming, and I just thought of this. In the car this morning, And again, it's one of those call this 800 number, and it's nothing that I would recommend, but I heard somehow, and I'm not a tax expert, and I know a lot of our listeners are in this industry, so if you have something to add on that, want to be a guest on our show, get a hold of me, and maybe you can educate us a little. I'm very hesitant on these because I don't trust you're going to get your money back, but have you...
I don't understand what they're deducting. What are they deducting?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
All the money you put in this oil and gas investment is deductible to you this year.
Maybe.
And to act fast.
I have sort of an idea on that. Maybe they're talking about something related to the qualified business income deduction. Maybe if you're buying in to these oil and gas.
I don't think it had to do with QBI at all.
I don't know.
Related to 100%, deduct 100% of intangible drilling costs off your taxable income. So there's these gas drilling partnerships that you can participate in.
Okay.
And they create an intangible drilling expense.
That's interesting.
That must be like pre-funding future drilling costs or some weird thing like that.
Yeah.
So this was very creative, Jim. You just happened to hear this on the radio?
I heard it on the radio this morning.
So, again, what does this have to do with severance pay?
He takes the severance pay and puts it in there, and it's 100% deductible.
Okay, gotcha.
But we're back to my original thing with the donor advised fund. You kind of lose your money.
Right.
I highly doubt, and I know the oil and gas industry gets special income tax deductions. Here is a type of partnership that Chris just did a quick Google search. So they're structured as partnerships. They're designed, I would assume, to take advantage of this intangible drilling deduction or something that the oil and gas industry has. And I worry it's a black hole. You're going to put your money in. You're going to get an income tax deduction, but good luck trying to get your money out type thing. So I would be hesitant on that. But, again, I didn't expect your call today. This is not a staged call. I was listening to the radio this morning, and that was one of the ads. And I didn't really pay attention to it because I ignore ads like that.
Yeah.
But it just got me thinking because we got on the subject of Wyoming, and that got me on the subject of oil and gas. And then my phenomenal memory pulled that radio show ad from this morning. So you might want to look at that, George. I mean, I'm not recommending it, but do your own due diligence. And if this seems legit, that is an option. It's, what is it called again, Chris?
Intangible drilling.
Deductions for tangible and intangible drilling costs. The tangible ones have to be depreciated over time, but the intangible ones have special treatment, apparently.
Yeah, to be deductible all year.
Yeah. So there's something there that we're clearly not experts on, but we heard it once from a guy on the radio.
Excellent. Well, we can learn something every day.
And the only other recommendation I had, George, because it's really hard, you've maxed out all your deductions that you can do in qualified industry term, but it references your 401k, IRA, things like that. You've maxed out all of this. The only other question I have for you, are you self-employed?
I am not.
You're not. Okay. All right, well, that really wouldn't help then. The only reason I mentioned that is I was at the Ed Slott convention. Would you call that a convention or a meeting? I call it a meeting. It's not really a convention.
Tribal gathering.
Anyways, I was at the Ed Slott group, and there's a lot of very intelligent people there. And I was chatting
and
with...
And somehow they let Jim come in.
And they let me in, yeah. And anyways, I was chatting with a colleague of mine, and he was telling me how one of his clients was going to receive either $500,000 or $600,000 in a lump sum payment such as yours. It was either severance or a buyout. I forget. I'm pretty sure it was severance. And what they did for him is first quickly squashed that and negotiated a payout over two taxable years of about $250,000, $300,000 a year for the next 2 years. Now, that doesn't help you. But then he went on to tell me what we then did is this client of his had a legitimate business, and he was self-employed under this legitimate business. This business created a defined benefit plan, otherwise known as a pension plan. Because of this gentleman's age, the funding of the defined benefit plan is set by current interest rates. Mm-hmm. the age of the founder, other employees, but there were no other employees. It was just him. He was self-employed. And it turned out he had to fund, you have to fund it for 3 years. He has to put in $250,000 a year. It's totally deductible. It's not that the business has to earn $250,000. He has to fund his defined benefit plan with $250,000 this year, next year, and the third year, $50,000. The money has to go in, but he gets to deduct it. And it's going to time almost perfectly with the separation of that big lump sum check into two smaller ones. And then, rather than taking the pension option, which he could do, he, when he quote-unquote retires, is going to take all that money as a lump sum payout and transfer it tax-free into his IRA. And that's how he reduced a massive amount of taxable income. So it's often done with defined benefit plans if you have a legitimate business. Now, it's not the end of the year. I don't know anything about you. I don't know if you ever contemplated starting a legitimate business. But my colleague did not do this. He hired a consultant. The consultant, I have her contact info if you would like to chat with her. Because you need an expert in defined benefit plans to pull this all together. I don't know the type of money you're talking. You didn't share it with us, and you don't have to. It's not germane to this conversation. You would need to decide if, first of all, you have a legitimate business you could establish, and the consultant will explain what you would need to do to make it a legitimate business, and then create and fund a defined benefit plan. But it must be funded over consecutive years. It's not a one-time thing.
And these large required contributions to these are when you're fairly old. So we didn't ask your age either. This only is going to probably work actuarially if
you're fairly
he's
old.
Close
older.
To retirement like, age.
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah,
it's
like
a
if you're Joe's
retirement.
Age, no. If you're Chris's yeah. age, yeah, you're like near death. Yeah. But
I'm your guy's age.
Okay, so you're young.
Yeah, whatever.
Youngish.
But anyways, that I found that very, very intriguing, and I'm going to try to get that consultant on the show as a, I think she would make a good guest mm-hmm. for situations. But again, the key was my colleague first squashed that payment and told my client, we've got to renegotiate this over two tax years. And unfortunately, you've already got the check in hand, and that's going to make it a lot harder.
But you can handle that first contribution, get it deducted from this
right.
amount. The only thing is coming up with the money to make the contribution
yeah,
next year.
Right.
So, yeah. So this may not fit unless...
And this, if I remember... In fact, I know I remember correctly because I asked him about that. How is he going to fund the $50,000 in year three? This gentleman is an attorney and has a side practice as an attorney and feels he's going to make that money to fund year three's $50,000 contribution.
Right. Got it.
But I thought then the cool thing was you take it as a lump sum if you don't want the pension and just transfer it back into an IRA, and you essentially got all that money into an IRA over a three-year period. The cost of all this, the cost of the consultants, I'm sure they don't come cheap to set up and do all this for you. But it's a legitimate defined benefit plan, so you run into ERISA rules. It's not, oh, gee, I'm going to call up Vanguard and fill in some paperwork and have a defined benefit plan. You need a consultant. You need to file ERISA documents. You need to do this legitimately. But my colleague did save his client a hell of a big payout from $600,000 in 1 year to pretty much tax-free over 3 years.
Yeah.
Or tax-deferred because right. he'll be taxed
yeah.
when he takes
Correct.
It out.
But then you can control the distribution
right.
somewhere.
Unfortunately, those are the only three options that I can think of with the oil and gas drilling thing. Probably being the quickest is an 800 number. They'll take your money at any time. But I don't know much beyond how you get your money back after you give it to them. But I can't think of anything else. Can either of you two?
No.
No.
I thought the chances were slim with my own research I've done, but thought I'd call and ask just to see if any other ideas that was out there.
Now, Joe suggested dying, but I pointed out to her it's IRD, and that won't work. So they just tax whoever inherits it as income as well.
Well, tax it right to the estate.
Mm-hmm. Well, the positive thing is he got severance pay.
That's always
not
good.
Not everybody gets that, so.
That is good,
that's
yes.
Very nice, even though you're going to get taxed.
Was this a voluntary separation or an involuntary separation?
We're calling it in the middle.
A negotiated separation.
It, yeah, it was a negotiated one, so. So, I mean, it leaves me in a good spot. So, you know, it was kind of a, you know, I was looking to retire next summer anyways, so it kind of works out.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, so, and just like you say, I just wasn't expecting it quite this soon, and then with the, you know, tax ramifications based on, you know, basically a high earner and then getting three-year salary in 1 year.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is income taxes are a little bit lower than they were 2 years ago.
At least it's happening now.
Yeah.
Not,
yeah,
after 2026.
Yeah, 2026, you'd be back to the old higher rates.
And then I hope to use this time for the tax window to start transferring stuff.
There
well, there's the glass
you
know, half full. Next year, you can start doing stuff and you won't have it contaminated by this pesky severance pay coming in.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. So you're finding the optimistic outlook.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate
thanks
the time and effort.
It was very interesting. Thanks for calling.
All right, take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
I'll try to get that consultant on for people in not necessarily his situation, but those contemplating a large payout who have the ability to have a legitimate business.
Yeah, and I'd also recommend to people don't just blindly take a severance offering.
Yeah.
Think this through. Think this through. And most of the time, there is, sounded like his company was particularly intransigent.
What does that mean?
Wow.
It's kind of stuck in the mud, was, you know, not willing to be flexible at all.
Dogmatic. I like that better.
Well, kind of.
Dogmatic means stubborn.
Kind of, yeah.
Never heard of intangible. Whatever
intransigent?
Intransigent.
It's okay. Well, I'll probably never use that word again on the show.
See, if you would have said intransient to something.
Intransigent.
Whatever. I would have thought transient. Like you're being the opposite of a transient.
So yeah, but you are. You're stuck. You're not moving.
Oh.
So kind of, yeah, it's kind of, see how it all
connects.
See
how I broke that
word
out?
It all connects to the roots in Latin.
It's did.
All, yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay, so I was
but
on
anyway,
the right track.
So they're not very flexible.
No.
But a lot of companies will. You know, especially, you know, companies that have cash flow concerns, they'd be happy to split it up and delay the payment out to you until next year a lot of times. So I would make sure you consider all the ramifications, particularly tax ramifications, when you're negotiating, separating from your job, these
gotcha.
Severance payments.
I agree.
Deals,
I agree.
Especially
100%.
When it's right at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Just having them delay it 1 month from December into January can make all the difference
in
the world.
Well, again, the case of my colleague, we even admitted, I says, wow, it's a good thing he got a hold of you. He said, absolutely, because if he would have just taken the big lump sum check, he wouldn't have been able to have helped him. But that is a unique strategy using defined benefit plans, but it's only going to fit in such a narrow scope of situations. But for those where it does fit, it saved this person. Just do the math. If you got, I can't remember if it was $500,000 or $600,000 as a lump sum, as opposed to pretty much getting almost all of it essentially tax-free, in the sense you're going to have these big deductions as a self-employed person funding your pension and then moving that tax-free into an IRA when you close your business down. Interesting strategy on that one. Okay, well, now that we have Joe up here, we are going to elevate ahead of a lot of people, because this email just came in on Monday, and today is Tuesday. It didn't come in on Monday. It came in 2 weeks ago. I'm raising it to the top because, first, it's a tax question, and we have Tax Joe here. And second of all, he said two magic words that got him to the top of the pile.
I'm from Kentucky.
That's three words. I'm from Kentucky.
From Kentucky.
No, he signed it. Go Pats.
That gets you to the top of the line?
It's my radio show. My rules. Go Pats gets you to the top.
Okay.
Go Giants would not get you to the top.
So I guess some people can plug their nose and write that to get to the top of the list.
Go Pats. You have to mean it when you write it.
Oh, okay.
He put a couple little exclamation points, so you know it's real.
I get it. So what's his question?
Okay, it begins. Dear Jim and Chris, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I listen to many financial podcasts, and yours is by far the most informative, especially Jim.
Nope, stop.
Someday,
it doesn't say that.
Joe, you read this. Does it not say, especially Jim? His brilliance is world-renowned.
I don't think that it says that.
Someday it's not going to say that. Just like today, it doesn't say that.
If you want to get your email to the top of the pile.
Yeah, include that verbiage. Go Pats and praise Jim undeservedly.
If Go Pats is too hard to type, you can just say something nice about me, and that'll get you to the top of the pile. Okay, I am retiring at the end of this year. My wife and I will be 52. I believe this will provide us with a very big tax planning window before our Social Security and required minimum distributions begin.
And a very long go-go phase.
Very long, long go-go. He says, we have fully paid for our house, and we have $3.7 million in savings, broken up as follows. $1.8 million in a 401k, $400,000 in Roths and HSAs, and $1.5 million in a brokerage account, of which $500,000 is unrealized capital gains. Put another way, they got about a million of basis in there. We plan to purchase our own health insurance through the Affordable Care Act exchange. I'm trying to determine the best combination of Roth conversions and harvesting of our capital gains at the 0% federal tax rate while still qualifying for my ACA premium tax credit. For those who don't know, let me pause there. Why don't you explain what the ACA premium tax credit is? Because we're talking as if everybody knows what the heck we're talking about.
Right. So if you have modified, Joe should probably, modified adjusted gross income. As soon as I say those words, that's in the world of taxes. And since we have Joe here,
thank you.
We'll let her.
Isn't it just adjusted gross income, not modified adjusted gross income?
It is adjusted gross income.
So it's
but it does have some, I do think it has, because we talked about this several weeks ago, it does have some modifications that you do have to
To make.
But why don't we explain what the ACA premium tax credit is before we get into how to figure it out.
If you buy your insurance, your health insurance, through the marketplace, what happens is they give you an advance or a credit for the premiums based on your income or modified adjusted gross income. And at the end of the year, there's this time period that comes where you basically calculate whether or not you were eligible for the credit or how much credit you were eligible for. So they've advanced you this credit during the year, which decreases the amount of your premiums every month.
Based on what you tell them for your estimated income, your estimated AGI.
And then at the end of the year, you will tell them, obviously, on your tax return, your exact income, and they will determine if you were eligible for that advance credit amount, which lowered your premiums, or, on the other side, if your income was higher, then they take some of that back.
And to qualify for the credit, and it's on a sliding scale, there's different levels of the credit, you have to have less AGI than four times the federal poverty level, correct? Isn't that the measure?
400% of federal poverty level.
Correct.
Yes.
And so, for instance, in 2019, if there's only two people in the household, he only mentioned him and his wife. I don't think he mentioned any kids in this.
He didn't, but
see.
I think he said something about opportunity.
He did say children.
Yeah.
So he's going to have a household of more than two. But the AGI, the AGI is $65,840. If there's two in the household, $83,120 if there's three in the household, and there'll be a slightly higher number if there's four in the household, and so on. If you earn more than that, you will receive no credit. $1 more, it's a cliff.
Right.
You won't get any premium tax credit. But this premium tax credit can be quite large. If you're buying insurance for two people plus on a family plan, might save you $1,000 a month, $1,500 a month, somewhere around there. It can be
especially
quite
if
loud.
They're older in their 50s and 60s, the premiums are going to be substantial.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah, Jim knows. Yeah.
I know that firsthand. So Qualifying for it is important. Mm-hmm. And as Joe said, the credit is given now by paying a lower premium. The insurance company wants their full premium. The government actually starts paying the insurance company the part of the premium that they think you would have earned in a tax credit. So the insurance company gets their money right away. That's why the government will come after you at the end of the year if your income is higher than you told them. It's really the only credit where you pre-tell them what mm-hmm. you're going to earn. Rather than waiting to the end of the year and seeing if you qualify, they're going to assume everyone qualifies at the beginning of the year. And at the end of the year, when you file your taxes the following year, they're going to come back and get you or ask for the money back if it turns out you earned more. If you told them, hey, I'm only going to earn $30,000 this year, and then you end up earning $300,000, you would have gotten a premium tax credit quite high, and they're going to come back and ask for a hell of a lot of that, all of it back. So right. It's really a unique tax mm-hmm. credit. You apply on the honor system, Scouts Honor. Hold your two fingers up. Scouts Honor, this is what I'm going to earn. And then at the end of the year, when they actually see what you earned on your taxes, then they can figure out if they shouldn't have paid that money, and they'll come right. back and get it.
So that's what this person's talking about, trying to manage that recognized income during this, before Medicare
exactly,
years.
Exactly, and I mm-hmm. agree, and I'm going to tell him, as we answer his question, the same caveat that I warned George, our previous caller, don't try this at home. Remember I mentioned that oil and gas thing that I heard advertising on the radio, and I said it's like a black hole, I wouldn't try it. What you're contemplating doing, I'd be very cautious on, because if you go $1 over on your conversion, when I first read his email, let me finish his email and yeah. I'll tell you what I thought. Okay, so we plan to purchase health insurance through the Affordable Care Act exchange. I'm trying to determine the best combination of Roth conversions, harvesting capital gains at 0% federal tax, and qualifying for the ACA premium tax credit. It seems to me that Roth conversions are the most valuable. I'll debate that depending on how much that premium tax credit is. But it seems to me that Roth conversions are the most valuable, so I'm thinking of converting $70,000 a year, which combined with an additional $30,000 of capital gains, which I will generate to provide for my annual spending, the standard deduction and the American Opportunity College tax credits for my children will result in zero federal tax liability, thereby allowing me to qualify for the ACA premium tax credit. I would love to hear if you think this is a good approach, or perhaps if I should make larger Roth conversions and totally lose the ACA premium tax credits. Thank you. George from Massachusetts. Go Pats. I want to say his idea, and we have the sound effect, is just going to be a big fat ant. Oh, wait a minute, Chris.
I wasn't ready.
Oh, you didn't know about the ant. There you go. Joe, why don't you burst his bubble first, and then I have a few things I want to opine about.
Well, it sounds like he thinks that this is about his tax liability, because if he has no tax liability, then he thinks he's going to get the credit. I don't know if that's exactly what he meant, but at the last
that's
part of that, it kind of
yeah.
sounded like that. So the premium tax credit is if you take your AGI and then you add taxable interest or tax exempt interest back into that, that's going to be the number mm-hmm. they utilize in order to calculate your premium tax credit.
Right.
So he gave some numbers that were higher than that 65,870, whatever.
Yeah, but he has a couple
threshold.
More in the household, so maybe he...
True, so right. 85, so up 85 a little
we
bit.
Don't know but, how many kids you have. The key to understand
yeah.
is they're going to look at the top line number, not the bottom line
right,
number.
Not the tax yes. liability after those AOTC right. credits.
Right.
You're trying to think, oh, I can gross 100. I can take a $24,000 standard deduction. I can get this deduction for this kid and that deduction for that kid. And it's going to put you below the 400% poverty level for the amount of people in your household, which you didn't share to us. It's not going to work that way. The government's on to this game. So they're going to look at the top line number before you take all those deductions.
Right. And remember, he mentioned capital gains in there. Capital gains are included in that AGI number. So if he thinks that the $70,000 is a completely different thing than the $30,000, he has to combine them. It's still $100,000. So don't forget that even though you might be in a zero capital gain rate, you still include those capital gain amounts in your taxable income, in your AGI.
But he's barking up the wrong tree.
Well,
what he should be doing, here's my, I tend to sometimes get opinionated.
Mm-hmm, great.
Opinionated.
Sounds perfect.
No, he's saying no. Opinionated.
There you go.
There we go. I knew I could do it.
It was stuck
what
in
the
there.
Hell, that word is getting stuck in my head. This is ridiculous now. I think I have a sickness. I got to talk to my speech and coach.
Your speech and coach? Well, let's talk to him about that that title first.
My speaking coach.
Oh, man.
Clearly that hasn't started yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
He sent me another email to sign up. I don't know if he's known what he's gotten himself into.
Our listeners are in full support of your pursuing this relationship with the speech and coach.
Whatever.
So you're opinionated. You have something to add.
Here's my idea, listener. Have your cake and eat it too, for Pete's sakes. Mm. You don't see the forest because of the trees. You like all this, huh?
Kind
of. All right.
Yep.
You got $1 million a basis. What the hell are you doing declaring cap gains? Declare them later.
Cherry pick.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Do specific share identification and live off of the $1 million basis. Leave the cap gains sitting there. Maybe you'll die and get a step up in basis anyways. So start spending your $1 million of basis. Now you have a tax liability of big fat zero. And then listen to a show, an EDU show, that Chris and I are going to do in a couple of weeks, either next week or the week after, on the 60-day rollover strategy for Roth conversions. And then you'll be able to nail the exact amount you can convert every year and still qualify for the most ACA premium tax credit. And to hell with trying to tie cap gains taxes into this. You said you want 30 grand of cap gains to live off of every year. You got $1 million a basis. My God, you could safely withdraw that every year from your basis and not run out between now and 70 and a half. Mm-hmm. Oh, 65, because that's when you go on Medicare. Right. So that's my take on this. What is your take?
Yeah, he's. I think he's
missing the forest for the trees.
Yeah, he's coming at it the wrong direction.
He could have his cake and eat it too.
Any more?
I'm full of them.
You're full of them.
Something, yeah.
Sure. So no, I completely agree that that's. And I don't know that it has to be done with this tricky proposal that we're talking about, the 60-day rollover Roth conversion.
I'm just worried if this is a taxable account,
right?
He gets a big distribution,
right?
So that's why.
And depending on how it's invested, he may not, it could be income out of his control,
yeah,
right? Because he could be invested in
funds
that are going to declare for him,
right? That's why income, I said do the conversion with our 60-day strategy that we're going to review in another week or two. You know the strategy I'm talking about.
I know the strategy you're talking about.
It'll work perfect in here. But it's because he's got $1.5 million in a taxable brokerage account, basis of $1 million. If it is invested in mutual funds, you might get a massive distribution from one or two funds that blow this whole thing up. You cannot undo conversions. That's where this is going, listener. Well, listeners. And years ago, I would have told him, convert all $1.5 million. Right. Figure it out next year. But you can't undo a conversion. So if you, let's just say 83,000 is the max you can have. You got three people in your household. So you convert 80, thinking you're going to give yourself a little buffer. And then your funds distribute $5,000. Right. You got $1.5 million invested in funds. It's not hard to get $5,000 distribution from $1.5 million. And all of a sudden, you get no ACA premium tax credit.
Right.
But if you do our strategy on the conversion, you'll get your ACA premium tax credit.
Right. You'll be able to control the conversion and know all of, if not close to all of, the numbers.
Absolutely. By the end of December, you'll know it all.
True, because even though you don't get the actual document, the tax document,
you know the distribution.
You'll be able to see what it is.
You'll know the distribution.
Yep.
So that's my take, Joe.
That is my name, Joe.
Is what I said. Do you agree? Anything else you can think of?
He actually mentioned something about is should I even worry about the ACA and just convert?
He did mention that.
And that just depends, but we just...
I think so. He was fairly young.
He's 52.
52, so he's got a long time to be doing conversions ACA. To get that 1.8 mil in the 401k. I'm sure that's the target that he's trying to get into the Roth.
Probably.
This is a tough one for that. He would need, and I'm not trying to throw out our service... We have a service. You need to start projecting what these RMDs are going to do to you in the future in order for us to answer what's more valuable. Remember, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow, but we don't know what taxes are going to be tomorrow. We know taxes are relatively low now. The ACA premium tax credit for you and your family, I bet you could amount to $1,000, $1,500 a month. So we're not talking chump change here, $12,000, $18,000 a year. But one could argue that that $12,000 to $18,000 of savings you could then reinvest and use later to spend or invest or use that money later to pay taxes on future conversions. I don't think the ACA premium tax credit's going to be around from 52 to 65 for you. I think the ACA premium tax credit's days are numbered and may be gone in another 3, 4, 5, 6 years. They're going to play, especially if Sanders or Warren get into office, they're going to be sucking up your money to pay for everyone else's health care with their free health care for all. So you might want to try to get the ACA premium tax credits while they're there and then try to selectively convert. What you got to understand, listener, that $1 million of basis, that's what's going to allow you to do tax planning.
That buys you the freedom.
That buys you time. And that $1 million is what you're going to live off of, assuming whoever is holding those assets is doing specific share identification where you can specifically tell them, just sell my basis shares. So for years and years, you're going to have no income. And you're going to be able to fill those lower brackets probably with $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year of conversions anyways. So at $1.5 million, you're already converting 8% of it a year. You do that for 10 years, that's 80%.
Yeah, and you likely don't have to convert. People oftentimes, and I've talked to people recently that their goal is to have everything converted to Roth.
You don't
want to
do that.
They just love the idea. That's not, financially, that's not generally the best approach.
Although he might be able to use that million of basis to get a lot of that money in at very low tax brackets.
Right. And protect him from future tax uncertainty.
Right. So what we look at for people who want to get all their money into a Roth, we look at the cost of getting it into the Roth. If you're getting it in at the 28 or 33 or 35 or 37 bracket, is it 37 still around or is 35 now, but it's coming back to 37? If you're getting it in at a higher bracket and later in retirement you got nothing in taxable money and you're taking it all out of Roths, you've wasted your 10, your 12, your 15 bracket. They're wasted. Yeah. And instead you got it into the Roth at 20 or 22 now and 25 and 28 and 32 and all these. God, there's so many brackets now. I can't remember what the hell they all are. But you get the picture, listener. However, in his case, guys, I think it's that million of basis that's his ace in a hole that he's not really considering. He's talking about trying to get cap gains. To hell with the cap gains. You get all your damn money into a Roth, you'll get all those cap gains tax-free later. Use that million of basis now, qualify for the ACA, and you're still going to be able to convert, depending on what 400% of AGI is for you. You didn't tell us the number of kids you have, but three kids is 80 grand. Three in the household. So you, your wife, and your one kid. and you can convert $80,000 a year. Am I missing something here?
No.
He could convert $80,000 a year because you got all basis. Mm-hmm. Now, the trick is you got to watch distributions coming from that portfolio of yours. Mm-hmm. So that's why you're going to want to listen to the show where Chris and I are going to teach people again a little trick on how to buy yourself a couple of months into next year before you actually do a conversion to actually convert and figure this all out. Neat little trick, and we'll teach it to listeners again in another week or two.
And I think, wasn't this one we came up with? Mostly you?
No, he emailed me this question.
No, the trick. The 60-day trick.
Oh, no, yeah, that's our...
This isn't one we...
No, I didn't...
A lot of things we pass on that we've gained from other people.
This is ours.
This is in-house.
Yep, and I have another one that I thought of and I announced it to the Ed Slot group. We'll share it on another show. And I earned the nickname.
He got a nickname,
Birdman. Yeah. Birdman.
Yeah, he got a nickname
from Ed.
Must have been they really respected his
contribution. People came up to me afterwards and said, "This was the best thing I got out of the presentation." Is what you said. I felt, wow, thank you, because don't let Ed know that. But Ed loved the idea, and he nicknamed me Birdman.
Well, you'll be recognized from here on out at the Ed Slot program as Birdman.
I hope he doesn't keep calling me Birdman, because all week he was calling me Birdman.
Could be worse.
How could it be worse? What's worse than Birdman?
Oh, there's a lot of things. I'm not going to say them on the podcast. But
anyways, I will chat about that when we do a EDU podcast, Chris, on the still working exception. It was the way I kind of drill down into things at times. I just mentioned to the group, hey, here's what I'm thinking. And Ed said that would absolutely work. And I got the nickname Birdman from that.
Perfect.
But we'll talk about that later as well. But these are two little strategies that Chris and I came up with. And the Roth conversion strategy is one that this gentleman can definitely, definitely benefit from. But use that million of basis. Don't worry about saving it. Spend it and allow you to do conversions and the ACA premium tax credit. You're going to have your cake and eat it too.
You're proud of that.
Yeah.
Very excited today.
It's my Proverbs. Yeah. My speech coach. Yes, I said that right. My speech coach. What are you making fun of that for? Speech coach. That's what he is.
That's not what you said the first time, though.
What did I say?
Speeching class or something.
No, I meant speech coach, speaking class.
I think speaking coach. I think that's what it originally was.
Speech and coach. It was speech and coach.
Speeching coach.
Whatever. I was a little passionate on that. You wait. When I start sounding really good on the radio, you're going to be jealous.
We're not. As soon as we go back on the radio, it'll be great.
Oh, podcast, rather, whatever we're on. As soon as our listeners will notice when my coach is finally working.
It sounds like Pee Wee Herman, the movie.
Yeah.
That when at the very end, this is going to be too hard to explain. But Pee Wee Herman, he talks like Pee Wee Herman. But then at the very end of the show, when they're doing that little mini movie that had Morgan Fairchild in it and stuff, and he plays himself as the busboy or the bellhop at the hotel, and he talks into this microphone and he has this really deep masculine voice instead of the Pee Wee Herman voice. That's what I'm expecting, is there's a transformation where it's no longer Jim and his Jimisms and Massachusetts accent, and it sounds like, I don't know, James Earl Jones.
I don't know if he's going to make me sound different, but he's going to make me sound more intelligent.
Okay. Okay.
You have your doubts too, woman?
Mm-hmm. No. I'm sure it'll be great.
He was at the Ed Slot group, and he gave us a talk on how to give talks. And I hired him because he did a really good talk.
I think
He talked to you about talking?
Yeah, I think you do just about talking. Fine talking. You're a fantastic talker.
I don't know if she's giving me a compliment or if she's not.
There is something to be said for volume.
Volume?
Yeah, quantity and
we are really going down a rabbit hole.
Level. Mm-hmm.
Is this pick on
you? You have both in space.
No one's picking on you.
Yeah. Anyways, listen, I hope you found our answers interesting, and please listen And I think maybe next week or the week after, we have to do it somewhere in October so people can start planning for it.
Okay.
On our strategy on doing Roth conversions to buy you more time, and I would pilfer that $1 million of basis and live off of that and fill your brackets with conversions up to the ACA limit. Now, remember, it's not a, it's a cliff, but you have to weigh a couple of things on ACA, and I meant to mention this. It's not, gee, if you stay under 83,000, you get the full credit.
Right. So it's a variable-sized credit.
Right. Mm-hmm. And every dollar of income starts reducing the amount of credit. But the first dollars reduce it far less than the last dollars. And there's going to be a point, and what you do, you're in Massachusetts. Oh, wait a minute. He's in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they have their own.
They've got their own.
Hmm.
The hell, I spent all this time answering the guy's question.
Well, we're going to pretend you were from Kentucky. That's where this applies.
True. We have people listening from all over. Listener, I don't know much about MassCare, but do you qualify for ACA premium tax credits under MassCare? If memory serves me correct, you were exempt from ACA because you got your own little thing in Massachusetts.
I think I think you might be right.
Might want to try this thing called Google and see.
Okay.
But I don't. Do you know Joe offhand?
I don't. I mean, I know like Colorado has their own Colorado Health.
Yeah, but Colorado is part of ACA.
But they are,
we have
our own
exchange.
Right, so Massachusetts is completely...
came out with their own health care years before ACA.
Right, they're completely different. So I don't know. I'm not familiar with the whole
Massachusetts you might
want
to make sure you actually get ACA premium tax credits being in Massachusetts. You do have MassCare, and I don't know because I don't live in Massachusetts anymore. I moved out of that damn state 21 years ago. But
well, he must... I mean, he mentioned the ACA, so I can't imagine if
he
wasn't.
Yeah, he also had the calculation wrong.
That's true.
So I just want to make sure under MassCare, you still get an ACA premium tax credit. I have never read contrary to that, that you can't get it, but I don't know how MassCare affects ACA. I honestly don't know. So everyone else from all 49 other states... everything we shared, if this were you, I would live off of basis. But for this gentleman, my advice still stands. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if under MassCare you get ACA premium tax credits or not. So that's something you will have to find out. I would talk to a Massachusetts-based CPA. And if any are listening to the show and know the answer to that, let us know and I'll announce it. Or get a hold of a healthcare agent. In Massachusetts, and maybe they'll know the answer. And again, if anyone listening knows, let us know, and we can let all of our Massachusetts listeners know if under MassCare they can still qualify for ACA premium tax credits. But I didn't pick up on that. I still would have answered his question as if he was from another state, because I just think the whole point is eat basis during your tax planning window. And that's why we go to great lengths here, Joe, when we do tax analysis for clients, to get them to understand the value of basis and tell them, hold off on spending this until you retire and then spend basis and control your brackets yourself and qualify for whatever you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Optimize conversions, get ACA, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm led to believe that they still do get the credits.
They do, from what you can see?
Yeah, I'm not going to swear to it, but my quick scan while you were talking, it appears that... the ACA credits are still in there in addition to the state subsidies that are going on as well. So the overall cost is very attractive because of the substantial support for the medical program there. So from both the ACA credit side and
plus the mask.
Plus the mass state contribution piece.
Mm. Okay. So it looks possible, but I would confirm with someone from Massachusetts. Either a healthcare person or a CPA or an enrolled agent, that you will qualify, and there's no gotchas that Chris, Joe, and I don't know because we're not Mass residents on MassCare. But I remember that at the last minute, they have their own little unique thing. Okay, next question. Time is it?
Time for one more.
One more?
We're right at an hour.
Okay. This one is a... I think it's a Social Security question.
I was going to say, if you don't have any more tax questions.
Oh, you're dismissed.
You can go. Okay. You don't have to hang here. You look like you're freezing over there.
I'm cold. I'm very cold.
She can go stand down by the fire.
I will do that.
Well, what do you
noticed everyone's office in the whole building has a fire except for mine.
You don't have a fireplace. Everyone else does.
I know.
I don't think you need one, though. You had the fan on earlier.
Heat rises. You're in the attic. Heat rises, so you're warm up here.
Weren't you warm enough earlier?
Well, I just kind of missed the ambiance.
Oh, it's the ambiance. It's not the actual heat.
Why don't we get a computer monitor and you can put that Yule log view on?
That's a good point. I'll try that.
And you can just look at what we're feeling.
That's mostly
downstairs.
What I'm missing.
The ambiance?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's got a little gas wood stove.
Yeah.
And then I have a gas fireplace and Laura has a gas fireplace.
I know everyone has has supplemental heat sources. It's all good.
But you.
But me.
We'll get your computer monitor with the Yule log plan.
Okay.
Another computer monitor just for your...
Okay.
Make sure you turn off your mic on
the way out. I will do that. Yes, thank you.
Okay. We have a Social Security question we'll wrap up today's show with. This is an Arizonian.
Mm-hmm.
He begins, hello and thanks for your website. I think he's talking about helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
Mm-hmm.
I retired January 25th. I turned 62 the previous October of 2018, October 29th, if you want the actual date.
Mm-hmm.
I applied for Social Security benefits January of 2019.
Okay.
I received my first check the third Wednesday of March.
Yep.
However, I have a feeling of paranoia.
Okay.
And he said, it's for this reason. I earned $27,000 as of January 25th, 2019, and have not worked a day since. However, when I listened to your podcast, I started to wonder if my benefit filing date of January 2nd, 2019 is considered my retirement date and not the 25th as far as the Social Security Administration is concerned. Hence, am I way over the earnings limit regardless of the first year exception that you have previously described? Do I have a problem? Thanks. George. We'll call him George. I almost said his real name. Not that that would matter.
So what he didn't tell, one key that would unlock the 100% answer on this is when he filed in January, did he file for February being the first month of benefit?
He didn't mention that.
Because the fact that he received the first deposit in March is not surprising, even if he was claiming a January benefit. Now, he's not going to get a January benefit, especially if he told them up front that he how much money he made in the month of January. If he divulged how much he thought he was going to make in January, they'd wipe that benefit out and start his benefit then in February. He will get benefit of the first year rule for where they will apply the earnings test on a monthly basis rather than an annual basis. And the fact that he hasn't earned anything since January is going to completely protect his benefits that are for February through December of 2019. Received, of course, 1 year in arrears. So the payment in March is likely his payment for his February benefit, which would be completely protected because of the application of the monthly earnings test. Even though he made a bunch of money, $27,000 as of the 25th of January. So he does not need to be paranoid. The only jeopardy there might be is if he thought he was going to get a benefit for the month of January, he can kiss that goodbye. They either didn't pay him because he told them up front and they started him in February, or they accidentally paid him and when they figure out what happened in January, they're going to take it back from him. One of those two things is going to happen. So my guess is, as long as he was forthright about the situation in January, the person processing the claim would have started his benefit in February, which is payable in March. He's clearly, his birthday is in the last third of the month, so after the 20th of the month. That's why he got paid on the, actually, I take it back. He was born, without him telling us, between the 10th and the 20th of the month.
Because he got it on the third
Wednesday. The payments are on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Wednesday of each month, determined by what day of the month you were born. If you're in the first 10 days, comes on the 2nd Wednesday, and between the 10th and the 20th day, you're on the 3rd, And then the fourth Wednesday, the unlucky folks, I guess, because they get pushed towards the end of the month, are the people born after the 20th of every month. So, but that March payment was for February, most likely. Most likely. That should have been enough time for them to process it, get it in the queue, so that the payment went out in March for his February benefit. So if they accidentally paid him for the January benefit, they're going to be taking it back, but I suspect that they didn't pay him. But he could have made $1 million in January, which would completely destroy his ability to collect a benefit in
January.
But
he'd only lose 1 month.
But he'd only lose that month. The amount you go over doesn't... Once you've wiped out the whole benefit by exceeding the earnings test to a large enough degree, months after that, if you truly have no earnings, and it doesn't have to be no earnings, it just has to be earnings less than the monthly earnings amount, which for 2019 is $1,470 a month. Now, he said he hasn't earned a dollar since January 25th. So if he continues that up for the rest of the year for 2019, all of his benefits for 2019 will be protected from effects of the earnings
test
after January.
Now, will they default him into the special one-year rule where they're not going, where they're going to apply the earnings test monthly?
They should have.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as he was telling them, they may not have, if he hid the fact that he had earnings in January, they wouldn't have known to trigger that. Now, I don't know in the processes. I would have to maybe check with a Social Security technician that knows how the computer is currently programmed. It didn't used to always do that. You had to ask for it, but my understanding now is it's pretty automatic. And they will look at it, and if it looks like they're going to, if you're in jeopardy, they then say, oh, no, maybe the monthly application of the test will protect them. And if it does, then they do it automatically, is my understanding. But if I ever learn anything different, I'll share it on the show here. But he should not have had to request it specifically. But the best way to make sure that would have come up and that would have been a topic of conversation during the claiming phase would be to divulge the fact that you plan on making $27,000 in the month of January. Then they'll know that there's an issue there and you don't want to apply it on an annual basis. So,
okay. Yeah. And what is the annual earnings test limit?
$17,640.
Okay.
So that $1,470 I quoted is just that figure, the $17,640 divided by 12.
Yeah. So for those who don't understand everything Chris just answered on this, if you retire before your full retirement age, and this gentleman did, when I say retire, I mean claim Social Security. He claimed Social Security at 62. Mm-hmm. That's before his full retirement age, which right. for him is probably 66 and 2 months or 66 and 4 months, somewhere around there. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, somewhere around there. If you retire before your full retirement age, which he did, he retired at 62, he is subject to the earnings test where they will reduce your Social Security benefit $1 for every two you earn over that
$17,640 per
year. That $17,640 limit. He earned $27,000. So he would have to take $17,640, subtract $27,000 from it, and he will lose $1 for every two in that
right.
resulting. So take that answer, divide by two.
Right. So we'd lose about $5,000 worth of Social Security benefits if they applied it on an annual basis.
On an annual basis. But in the year you retire, they take that dollar amount, $17,640, divide it by 12, so it comes up to $1,470,
mm-hmm.
And say only in a month that you earn more than $1,470 will you lose that month's benefit and right. that month's benefit
and,
only.
And you lose it all. They don't apply the dollar for every $2 over.
But you just lose the
you
amount.
You lose the amount for that month, and then the next month, as long as you stay under, you get that month's full benefit. So the rules change a little bit when they apply it on a monthly basis. It literally becomes a cliff then. You cannot exceed this.
Right.
We're going to protect you from the annual limit as long as you play ball and stay under this amount every single month.
You're okay.
But if you go over it, they'll
it's
just keep...
Cliff.
It's a cliff. They'll keep
So in this case, he's going to lose $1,470 as opposed to $5,000. Because if they applied it on an annual basis, he would lose about $5,000 because he earned $27,000. But if they apply that $27,000 of earnings on a monthly basis, He doesn't lose, excuse me, he doesn't lose 1,470. He loses whatever that month's benefit is, right?
And or it
is
it lost, you know, he's going to get a slightly higher benefit. It doesn't just disappear. They don't take it
they're
and keep
recalculate.
It, but they'll recalculate at some point. Hopefully they just processed him with a February start date.
So
that's
I misspoke
ideal.
When I said he's going to lose 1,470.
Right.
It's he's going to lose whatever his benefit for that month is. Could be $500, could be $1,800. I don't know what his monthly benefit is. I don't think he says that in his answer. No, he doesn't tell us.
No.
So the point is, though, listener, you're not going to lose it all, so you don't have to worry. But how would he find out? Well, if he's still getting checks, right?
Yeah, he'll find out about January. They'll send him a letter and say, we've figured out we overpaid you for January, so we're not going to pay you next month. So they might come. This might come to them in, my guess is it's October 1st. They likely, if he was working for a traditional employer that's reporting earnings on a regular basis throughout the year to Social Security, they would likely have picked up on it already and sent him a letter about January that they were going to take it back. And the way they would take it back is they'd send a letter and say, oh, next month, you know, say he got the letter in October, they're going to say, we're not going to pay you in November because we accidentally paid you for January and we shouldn't have. That's how it would work if they actually processed the claim for his benefit for January and didn't start it in February after his earnings were over. But I suspect they started it in February, especially if he divulged that he was still working in January making money. So just a speculation on my part, but I think odds are in favor of that approach. As long as he was dealing with someone reasonable and who was paying attention when they were processing the application. Sounds like he went in to actually make the claim.
So, anyways, hopefully he found that helpful,
yeah.
And our listeners did as well. And I think that about wraps it up for today's show, don't you?
It does. We got through another whopping three.
Two, actually.
One
was
a call.
Call.
I know, so plus two. So we need to, I don't know. We're not doing 24-hour marathon.
That was a good idea I had.
Shows.
We could.
Jerry Lewis style.
Get through this. I'm just saying. Before you hang up or say goodbye to everyone, we are coming out with I'm supposed to announce this.
Uh-oh.
I should have announced
it earlier.
I love
these when he hasn't told me ahead of time. And
no, I haven't told you anything about this. This is something Joe came up with, not Tax Joe, Marketing Joe, and with my input, and I liked it. So we are going to have a pumpkin decorating contest for our listeners.
What?
Yeah. So we have a bunch of little pumpkins from Yours Truly's Garden. Joe is going to feature them on Facebook, so go to our Facebook page, she said, and I guess you can't like a business page, but you can follow it. Is that what you do? I don't know.
Sure.
Our business page, I think, is my name, Jim Saulnier, and go to it for some reason. I don't know. But how are you going to get a pumpkin? What she's going to do is we haven't quite figured out how radio show listeners are going to get their pumpkin. Either they're going to call in or like the first 10 people who email her. We don't know. She'll figure this all out, and I'm going to announce on our next show, our EDU show, we'll have an answer to how you're going to get your pumpkin. 10 listeners will have a pumpkin from my garden mailed to them for free. She's going to pack them in a little box, put this little...
It's got to happen pretty soon to get there before Halloween.
Halloween's the end of the month.
I realize that, but this show isn't playing until next week, and then the one we record next isn't until the week after.
Oh, no kidding. This isn't until next week?
Yeah.
When does the EDU show play?
I don't know, Saturdays or something.
Well, that would be this week.
Yeah, but it's next Saturday.
Oh, well, hell, this is behind the eight
Correct.
Ball.
Correct, yes. So Marketing Joe needs to propose this in, like, August. But it could still happen, but we're going to have to roll this out very quickly.
And then the idea is we were
going
to mail them out.
On the Facebook, we can say, go to the Facebook page.
And that, there'll be information,
on there. So by the time this podcast is out, unless you're listening live, it's not quite there yet, but... Those of you who listen the traditional podcast method, by the time you're listening to this, there'll be some information on the Facebook
And the
page.
Best thing of all is you get a pumpkin from my garden.
That's the best thing?
I grew it.
Well, you can't even eat them, right? It's just like this
little
miniature.
No, these are ornamental pumpkins. Yeah, they're going to be little ones and little orange ones.
Mm-hmm. And some are bumpy, some are smooth.
Yeah. Decorated
cute.
Pumpkin.
And you can't carve them. They're so small, you just draw on them.
Do you want to know what the best decorated pumpkin wins?
What?
They're going to win a Thanksgiving pie. We're going to get a hold of the closest pie baking company to your house so you can live anywhere in the United States.
Sara Lee, maybe?
No, we're not going to mail a pre-made pie. They're going to go pick up a real pie. So depending on where you live, now hopefully you don't live in the middle of nowhere and you're not going to get a pie at that point. And in that point, we're going to send them one of those Wisconsin Kringles instead. So if you live in the middle of nowhere, you get a Wisconsin Kringle for Thanksgiving. But if you live near humans, then we will find a pie place near you. And on us, we will buy you a Thanksgiving pie, probably a pumpkin, but whatever you prefer. And you go pick up the pie. So that's how we're going to do this. Apparently, I totally forgot that this show is being played next week. So go to Facebook and find our website somehow on Facebook. I think you look. I'm not on Facebook, so I don't know. You're on.
He's the only Jim Saulnier.
So you go look up Jim Saulnier, apparently, on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook. Joe does all this. Mm-hmm. And she'll have instructions on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
But get your own pumpkin, decorate the damn thing, send her a photo, and she's going to have an artist judge it and pick the best decorated pumpkin.
Beautiful.
Just, I was supposed to mention that at the beginning
of
the show.
Very festive.
Can you move all that to the beginning of the show?
No.
Okay. Just tell her I did so she doesn't get mad at me.
Okay. I'll tell her. On that note, when you're done decorating your pumpkin, if you have some questions about what we might be able to help you with in your retirement planning, we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in Northern Colorado. We help people throughout the country, specializing in retirement planning, all things surrounding retirement, special focus on tax ramifications. That's kind of, you know, last few years gotten a lot more focus from us because I think it's an under-focused upon area and an area where people with some conscious decisions can actually keep more money in their pocket for their own retirement enjoyment rather than sending it off needlessly in excess taxes. I'll call them that. If you pay more taxes than you're legally required to do so, you're sending in excess taxes. If you prefer to do that, that's totally up to you. The rest of us taxpayers, thank you for doing so. But if you want to minimize your legal tax obligation, there's some strategies surrounding that that are unique in retirement that you might want to discuss with us or if you have other retirement-related questions, we'd be happy to talk to you. We offer what's called a coffee and a second opinion, which is our free introductory meeting where we can talk to you a little bit more about the services we provide, talk a little bit about your situation and see if we're a good fit. And you do so, you schedule such a thing by going to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You can also get there via chrishelps.com. I always forget to mention that one. Yeah, but Jim is right. Jim is one less letter, you know, one less character in the website. So it's more efficient getting to jimhelps.com. I admit that. I'll give you that one. But go to jimhelps.com. Our contact form is on there, as well as a little scheduling app where you can actually directly schedule your coffee and a second opinion. But if you don't see any dates and times that work for you on that app, please give us a call or reach out to us via the contact form, and we'll see if we can find something that works for you. So we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.